Okay, so now without further ado, I would like to bring us to the business at hand, and that means that it's now time to introduce tonight's speaker. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for everyone that came out. This is a nice, good-sized crowd, so Arjun must be a pretty popular guy, huh? Someday I hope to be like him. Hey, tonight our speaker is going to be Elgin M. He comes all the way from Exeter, California. He's got a sobriety date of January 3rd, 2006, which means that he just celebrated 9 years a couple weeks ago. His favorite AA slogan is "Keep Coming Back." So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Elgin. Come on.
Hello, everyone. I'm Elgin, alcoholic. Good-looking crowd. I'd like to welcome the newcomers. Stick around. Keep coming back, as we do have a solution to drinking. And I see all my old friends over here on the right. And God bless you all, and I love every one and single one of you. You're a big part of my sobriety. I guess I'm supposed to come up here and share my experience, strength, and everything that's happened to me. I'll tell you one thing. I absolutely love to drink. Yeah. I love the sensation. I love when I fill up my glass and full of ice and pour some gin in there and watch that sweat, that glass sweat. I absolutely love it. And I even love it more when it goes down my gullet and about 2 minutes later, I don't have a care in the world. And it was a solution for me for 30 years. And it worked for a long, long time. I'll give you a little bit of my history. I've got a really boring story. I didn't go to prison. I didn't do jail time. I didn't do a lot. I got a DUI. I spent a day on the side of a freeway picking up trash, and I wrote a lot of checks to get out of it. That was in 1996. That was the only time my wife told me that I might have a drinking problem. So I said, okay, I'll slow down. And the next day she walked in, and I was watching TV drinking, drunker than hell. And she said, I thought you were going to slow down. I said, I didn't start drinking until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Anyway, I was raised in an upper middle class town. I have great parents. There's no dysfunction in my family. I can't blame it on that. My family liked to drink a lot. We're Irish Catholics. And every time the family got together, there was drinking involved. I had my first drink, I don't know, about 13, 14 at my sister's wedding. I discovered the vodka Collins. And as I was going through puberty at my sister's wedding, I had a couple drinks. And I became like a John Wayne, man. I was good looking, and I could dance. And I loved the effect that it had on me. It took away my fear, and I had a blast. I suffered from an aggressive illness. I wasn't like a lot of guys I hear that once they started drinking, it was on. Not me. I was a jock. When I was playing sports, I didn't drink, and I could handle it back then. I had the power. I did everything that a kid from where I grew up I was supposed to do. You go to school, you play sports, you go to college, you get your degree, you get a good job, you get married, you buy a house. I did all that. But as that time went by, my drinking progressed. I didn't know anything about the definition of an alcoholic. I just figured that I could drink more than everybody else and I needed more to get drunk. That's that thing we call craving. I didn't know I was craving a drink. I just felt I needed another drink. Where normal people, pussies, drink a couple drinks and go, oh, I feel a little tipsy. I'm going to stop. Well, my theory is more is better. And I didn't know at the time anything about this obsession. You know, if we just suffered from that first part of this disease of craving, like if you weren't an alcoholic, you just quit drinking, and then your problems are going to go away, and you're not going to think about it again. My problem is, at the end, I couldn't quit, and I couldn't stay quit. I mean, that's all I thought about. I did everything I was supposed to do out in the real world, but as I grew older, as this disease progressed, it got me to the point of fear, where I was afraid of everything. And when I was a kid, I didn't have a care in the world, you know, I didn't worry about much, but as responsibilities got on me, I found that a drink would take care of it, and I'd just go, life's good, okay, let's go. And So I progressed, and at about 30, I was at a wedding, and I saw some girl I used to know in high school, and she's really hot, and I'm married with three kids, and I see her, and I start dancing with her, and my mother calls me over, and she goes, "Eldon, sit down." Oh, shit, here comes the queen. What's the queen want? And she says, "Sit down, listen, Eldon. Number one, you're a jerk. And your wife's sitting right there. I mean, one dance, but dancing with this girl, you're hitting on her. Knock it off." I said, "Okay, you're right. I'll knock it off. And number two is you're drinking. You're drinking way too much. And you've got to slow down, because I know too many guys, by the time they turn 40, they're just like you. They're in the book, it describes me. I'm young, upcoming, got my shit together. I'm going to be, you know, do something with my life." And they tear it all down and they lose everything. Lose everything. And I don't want that to happen to you. You're my only son, and I, you know, come on, do it for Mom, who's an alcoholic. But she saw me coming. So, and I said, "Mom, that'll never happen to me." I don't know how many of you said that, but, you know, it'll never happen to me. I didn't know too much about alcoholism. You know, I guess there were some alcoholics in our family, but it was never discussed. It was kind of a closet issue, and he never talked about it. And you know, old Uncle Ernie's coming over, you know, and okay. But that's all that was said. Nobody in our family suffered from it. Nobody in our family lost anything from it. I didn't have friends that lost anything from it. So anyway, I'm at 30, and I say I'll slow down. And then I started developing physical stuff, you know. And one time the doctor told me, about 31, 32, my blood pressure was through the roof, and I was having these heart palpitations. And he says, "You drink a lot?" I said, "Yeah, I've been drinking this over the holidays. You know, of course you drink a lot." And he goes, "Well, why don't you quit for a while and let's see what happens." And so I was able to quit. Okay, I was able to quit then. So I quit, and I miraculously got better, lost a ton of weight, got in great shape, did all that stuff. But I used to do stupid things, like I'm a farmer, and where I was farming before, we had the farmer's bar, and I used to go there. But I used to go there and say, "I'm not going to drink." And for 3 or 4 months, I didn't drink, and I'd sit there and drink Diet Pepsi and take major abuse. And it just came on me one day, I was feeling better, everything was going fine, and I said, "I'm going to have a drink. But after this, from here on out, I'm going to drink like a gentleman. And I'm not going to drink like a pig that I used to drink." And if you're a real alcoholic, that doesn't last long. And soon I was drinking like a pig. Progress, and then I got, you know, started getting sick again. And more responsibility at work, you know, and the family, and kids going to college, and all that stuff. And by the time I hit 40, my mother was right. I discovered the morning drink. That my life was, I was so stressed out and so full of fear that when I had that morning drink, by that time I was so polluted, that morning drink was the only drink that really worked for me. I got that glow. Just like when we first started drinking, you get that glow and you just feel great. That was the only time during the day that I would get a little bit of a glow. And I would promise myself, that's it. I just need this because I've got responsibility. I've got to go to work. And I can't do it without this drink. And it progressively got worse and worse until I moved out here in 2004, and about 2 years before that, at that time I was drinking 24/7, 7 days a week. I got so physically addicted to it, I knew that I was physically addicted to it, because I stopped for more than 2 hours, I'm a basket case. I'm shaking, sweating, you know, the detox stuff. And the only way I could function and hold up my look good was to drink. And then I would kind of go to normal a little bit, you know. And then I remember waking up in the morning and going, "I'm not going to drink." And then I'd start this coughing, and I'd have to go out in the garage. And I found the solution to that coughing, that just that dry heaves. And someday I'm going to blow apart. But if I had a little shot of vodka, that coughing stopped. And then I tell myself, solemnly, I know that I won't drink the rest of the day until I come home at 4 o'clock and sit down and have a martini like Ozzie and Harriet and just be the normal American family, you know. It wasn't 2 hours later, I had to have a drink. Okay, so I moved down here, and where I was farming up in Brentwood area, I was my own boss up here. I didn't have any partners. All my partners were down here or in San Jose, and I was, you know, I could pretty much do anything I wanted to do. So I could drink all day at work, and I did a damn good job of doing it. So I come down here, and I've got partners down here, and they caught on to me pretty quick. By this time, my doctor down here says, the power of this disease is, Elge, you're going to die. Your liver is, look at your liver. Your blood, your liver counts are off the chart, and you're going to die. Do you think that stopped me? No, that's how powerful the disease is. That's why it kills so many of us. And I said, yeah, I'll slow down, wink, wink, and I'd be drunk when I went to see him. I even had the balls to ask him one time, hey, what's your liver count got to be when you start turning yellow? Because that was my plan. But when I start turning yellow, I'll just quit. So he says, you don't want to go there, Alex. You're a dead man when that happens. Or you're a candidate for a liver, but you're an alcoholic, so you're not going to get a liver, so you're going to die. So life goes on. That Christmas of, 2005, I was a wreck. It was drag dad around, and basically all I did was drink and sleep. I'd go to Christmas parties. You know, I was a ball of fire. And I used to be so fun. That's what everybody, Elgin used to be so fun. And I'd drink, and I'd fall asleep, pass out on the couch, and I'd wake up, and I'd drink, and I'd pass out on the couch, you know. And I got to the point where in Bill's story, it talks about the lovely grammar, the vast, bitter morass of I was done. Well, that was me. I'd given up. King alcohol did to me what I thought it could never do. I didn't care anymore if it killed me. That's what kills so many alcoholics. I didn't think about getting help. I just accepted that I was going to die. That's how it was, all right? So I wasn't one of those guys going, man, I need help. I got to go to A&A. And it never crossed my mind. I mean, I was so sheltered in my life. Alcohol, I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I did know what treatment facilities were, because when I'd watch TV, a treatment facility commercial would come on, click, because it scared the hell out of me. So on December 1st, 2006, I call it, December 31st is amateur night for all those people that, you know, weren't going to go out and get crazy. I had been passed out since 6 o'clock that night, and I woke up on January 1st and proceeded to drink, and I got a phone call from my brother-in-law, who was at the time my partner, and says, hey, we got to go out to a ranch, we got to move a washing machine or something, I need your help. Yeah, sure, I'll go out there with you, and I got interviewed. Grass didn't come and do it, they were thinking about it, but my brother-in-law said, let me give it a chance. So when he says, Elge, you got to stop drinking, he went like this. And I said, oh yeah, I know, I got to stop. He goes, no, you don't understand. You're stopping drinking, or else. And this is the first time in my life I had faced consequences. I'm a senior partner in my business, he said, we're going to fire you. And I said, no, you can't. I'm a senior partner. He goes, watch this. We're going to buy you off, and you go just drink yourself to death. I said, well, I don't want to be bought off. I want to keep working. Well, quit drinking. I said, okay, I'll quit drinking. He goes, no. And here's the other, and your wife's going to leave you because she loves you to death, but she didn't want to down on him, but she didn't need it because she says, I'm not going to sit around and watch you die. I'm going to get along with my life, so screw you. You're out. So, you know, my options were I could continue drinking, go home, live with my mother. God bless her. I love her to death. I just lost her 2 years ago to cancer, but I was able to be there. Or I could do this deal. And I said, you're going to go away. I was just told. You're going to go away for a month, and you're not going to drink again, and you're going to sign this waiver. My asshole brother. You're going to sign this waiver that if you ever drink again, we can fire you. And so I said, well, I'm not going to sign that waiver right now because I'm pretty drunk. you know what? The biggest change in my life is this, is that I will. something God got me there, and that's what got me there. They didn't get me there. I said, I will. God threw me a rope, and I hung on to it. Or you might want to call it a moment of clarity, that I'm going to die. That they're offering me help. You better take it. Give it a try. So knowing nothing about AA, they set me up. And the best part of this whole story is they let me drink for 3 more days. And I did a damn good job. I let them drink. It's 3 more days won't kill them. So I said, okay. So on January 3rd, about 7 in the morning, I was checked in over at Cyprus when they had a detox over there. I got behind my bar, and I drink really good booze if it was somebody else's. But see, my problem was I drank in volume. I was drinking 1.75 liters of vodka a day, and the cheapest stuff I could get. And I had vodka bottles everywhere because I could. I had them in a truck. I had them in the garage. I used to pour these huge tumblers this big and put in that much vodka and that much Diet Coke, you know, and I'd be sitting there watching a ball game, and I had it there, and my wife never said a word. And during a commercial, I'd go out to the garage and hit my bottle in the garage. That's how sick I was. So anyway, I go before I go to detox, I'm finishing off my bottle of pop-pop, because any good alky hates to see good booze go to waste. So I'm getting a little scared, because I don't know what's going on. When I first came in here, I thought it was just a physical disease. That I'm going to kick this, go to detox, they're going to take me away for 7 days, get my head clear 30 days, and I'm going to go back to being the warm, lovable, fuzzball kind of guy I was. And little did I know. So my sponsor told me, you took your first 3 steps when you're sitting behind that bar drinking your last drink. I said, God, I need help. That's all it asked. That's all it took. Now listen, I've been raised in a very Catholic family. I love Catholics. I've been educated 16 years in Catholicism. And by the time I got to college, that old Dominican hating God was gone, and I went to Jesuits, and Jesuits taught me, and they taught me that we have a loving God. We have a very loving God. So in the last 10 years of my life, I never prayed for anything. God was completely out of my life. He was there, but I wouldn't let him in. So this was not foxhole stuff, God. I never even asked God, if you get me out of this one, you know, I guarantee you I'll do this. I never did that. I asked God, I said, I need help. And I got an answer, an epiphany, if you will. That it said, Elgin, just do what these people tell you to do. And contrary to your own opinion, you're going to be okay. So I kind of went in to detox with that mantra. They told me to go to sleep, which I gladly did. They gave me those funny pills. And I slept like a baby and sweat like a baby and shucked like a baby for 3 days, but I got better physically a little bit. And they said, you're ready to go up to rehab. And I didn't get to go to Orange County to one of them fancy spin drives. I went to Fresno, the 11th hour up there. And I spent 30 days up, 28 long, long days up there. And but it was good for me, because it started to get my head clear a little bit, and I did what they told me to do. In fact, I did it too well, because I go, all my homework's done. While the other guys are out in the back smoking cigarettes and all the bullshit, and I'm doing all my homework, and here's some more then, you know. But I gladly did it. And we sat around in little circles and talked about, you know, feelings and all this other crap. And basically, what I got out of this was that I'm a real alcoholic, and I admit it, I'm a real alcoholic, because I suffer from cravings and the obsession to drink. I've got it. All right? So the first AA meeting I ever went to was on a Sunday afternoon. And it was a day where I went to the 11th hour on Sundays. If you'd already been there 1 week, or you're on your second week on Sundays, they gave you a furlough and you're gone. You could leave from 10 to 5. But you had to pee in a cup when you got back. You could leave from 10 to 5. But the first Sunday you're there, you got to stay there. And there's a counselor there, Duhed Ron or some good guy, and he's going to take me to a meeting. Just me and him. And I went to, my sponsor says, a bozo-ass boring Sunday meeting during NFL football playoffs. And I didn't know him at the time, but I wanted a sponsor from Tulare County. I didn't want one from, they told me to get a sponsor. And God put grass in my life. And he's from Tulare County. And here's the deal. When I came into this deal, not drinking was okay with me because I knew it was killing me. But I figured that I'd been brainwashed that you equate drinking fun. No drinking, no fun. And I'm still drinking, thinking it's fun while blood is coming out of every orifice of my body. But it's fun. So this guy gets up there and he's doing what I'm doing right now, and he's sharing and he's having, it sounds to me like he's having fun in sobriety. So do-rag Ron, oh, I mean, go ask him. Go ask him. You know, I'm a sick puppy and I don't, just go ask. So I asked him, and he's still my sponsor today. So what I got out of that 30 days was I got my head cleared up a little bit, got a little bit better physically, still sick physically, but better. I got out of that rehab, and he says, I'll meet you at the Holiday Inn parking lot there, and we'll go over a few things, my rules, basically. And they're nothing tough. He gave me a couple of those morning books, you know, and he said, read these every morning. And I'm Catholic, and I'm going, oh, fucking rosary. Jesus Christ. He goes, no, it's not the rosary. You only do that during Lent. He says, just read these every day. And he said, it will grow on you. And I said, yeah, right. Okay. Learn. You already know the Serenity Prayer. That's easy. Learn that when you first come in here. Learn the third step prayer. What's the third step prayer? That's on page 76. Learn the seventh step prayer and say those every morning. And then just kind of plan out your day and just do it. What he had started me doing was the 11th step right off the bat. Developing a conscious contact with my higher power. So they said, get a sponsor and do these steps, you know. And I've pretty much already done the first three steps and then do this inventory. You know, in the book it says, next we launch on a course of vigorous action. Right after you get done with the third step, get up off your knees, and I read that to my sponsees. All right. And I did a fourth step. And I'll tell you what, guys, if you're new here, these steps we're going to live with the rest of our lives. We're going to learn more is revealed every day to us, and more is revealed to me. That I did the best of my ability with the fourth and fifth step. I know that scares a lot of people. It scares about half of my sponsees. They get to the third step, they think they found God, and they never do anything else, and they wonder why their life is miserable. So that fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, you know, that inventory, that cleaning up the wreckage of your past. That's what I'm doing. Because all these things, all these character defects that I have, my main problem is it's right there, is I'm selfish, self-centered, and full of fear. Was what I got out of my inventory. Because I have a lack of a conscious contact with my higher power. Because I was raised, I thought that I could do everything. And I could do most everything, except I couldn't beat alcoholism. I was painted into a corner, and there's nothing that can fix me. I can go to all the psychiatrists, I can go to all the doctors, I go to best friends, I got my wife tell me and tell me and tell me, I'm going to continue to drink because I'm powerless over alcohol. I surrendered. I know that. But you got to surrender to win. So I got up there and I did all those, I did those steps to the best of my ability and cleared the records of the past and got into 8, 9 and started making some amends with my direct family. All right? And that amends process, you know, I hear a lot of people, we'll love you until you can love yourself. Now, this is my opinion. See, all of us, especially newcomers that come in here, that's our problem. We love ourselves. It's all about me, and recovery is all about you, newcomers. It is all about you. All right? So I'd like to say, we're going to love you until you can love somebody else. Because that's what we're here for, to be a maximum service to God and our fellows. Get out of self. If I'm self-centered, egocentric, all that stuff, that means that I got to get rid of some of that self. That's my problem. The world, to my astonishment, does not revolve around me. I humbly say that I'm a pimple on God's ass. Okay? I'm not that much. If I die tonight, AA is going to keep going on. So I learned, and I heard all these days, and it's great that you guys are getting days, because I was the same way. Every day was a miracle for me. After drinking for 30 years, and the last 10 years drinking 24/7, and not being able to stop for one day was a miracle. And to stop, and then couldn't wait for that 1 month chip, and couldn't wait for that 3 month chip, and couldn't wait for that 6 month chip. In the meantime, I'm going through all these steps, practicing, trying to learn these principles. I knew all these principles before, but I neglected them. And I learned these principles, and I not learned them, I started acting on these principles. That's the key. And I started doing this stuff that they tell me to do. Not think it, do it. It's real simple. Just do it. So I started counting days, and I got to a year, and I got to that ninth step, and those promises started coming, and all of a sudden I realized, I looked back, that I had experienced a spiritual experience. Because you know what? It was not earth-shaking. You know, the sky didn't open, no crack of lightning, nothing. All of a sudden I look back and I go, today, I didn't think about how many days I had, and I didn't think about a drink. And I had a good day. And today I went out and helped somebody else. Today I went out and sponsored somebody else. Today I went out and helped a friend. And it wasn't about me. And I didn't give it a second thought. I just did it. The stuff called, you know, the promises, that intuitive thought. Those things that I never had thought of before. It was all about me. Cain, it's all about you. And that's your spiritual experience. It's all about you. So here, now I try to get back what was so freely given to me. And my main job here, and honest to God, God's will for me is to help you. So I sponsor a lot of guys, and I try to teach them these principles so they can do it. Now, I can't get any of you sober. It's an inside job. That's between you and God. All right? And nothing in the world is going to... I can't prevent myself from taking that first drink. But God can. Because in the book, my favorite saying in the book is, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, or our spiritual condition. So I do that on a daily basis. I do the 10th, 11th, and 12th on a daily basis. We took 1 through 9. I do 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. And it's a routine. And that getting up in the morning like Grass told me to do, and doing all that crap that I... Yeah, I'm going, oh shit. I absolutely cherish that quiet time in the morning. A cup of coffee, read my books, figure out my day. What's God's will for me today? What am I going to do for somebody else today? And what it does, it grants me a daily reprieve. Because I know for today, if I do what I'm supposed to do, I'm not going to drink today. All right? And all of a sudden, those days turn into months. And those months turn into years. And before you know it, you got a lot of years. But it's one day at a time. All right, so everybody, thank you very much. And I hope you keep coming back. Thank you.